and welcome to Flocking Amazing, the podcast all about deep and joyful learning from the team at Bird Brain Technologies. I'm your host, Sarah Fitzhenry, robot fairy godmother and all-around education enthusiast. Bird Brain is known for its groundbreaking technology for students, but this podcast is all about the grown-ups that guide and inspire them. And I don't know if you can hear in my voice, but I am extra excited today because we are talking to a librarian. Oh, Karen Fox, thank you so much for being our guest today. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Me too. Oh,
Karen is the librarian for grades 4 through 7 at Olean Intermediate Middle School. And we connected when we learned that she was applying to present with Bird Brain Tools at the New York State Library Association conference. And then I essentially stalked her through email until she was willing to talk to me on the podcast. So Karen, thank you so much for being here. And I can't wait to hear about Bird Brain in the library.
Thank you for having me. I am honored.
Are you ready?
I'm a Bird Brain fangirl.
I have a cat who desperately wants to be in this room. So he was
I just see him in the background. I'm like, ooh, come to me. No, that's
fine. If he has one eye, then that's Joey. If he has two, then it's Brian. But they're both orange. So you never know. Ooh. Let's start by asking, who are you and what is your teaching story?
Well, I am Karen Fox. I have been a librarian. I think this is my 12th year. The first half was in a 6 through 12 setting. And now I'm in a four through seven. I primarily teach fourth graders and fifth graders. And I live, or my schools are in rural Western New York. So where like Olean is technically a city, but it's very small compared to almost anything. And it's the biggest place around us. So we're a very rural area. And I just love bringing new things and exposing my students to things that maybe they wouldn't have connections to, because we have all these wonderful opportunities to bring stories and experiences to our students that they might not ordinarily get to see, being kind of far removed from things. So that's one thing that I love.
Did you start as a school librarian? Were you a classroom teacher? How did that happen?
I love my job and I'm so grateful for this career, but I completely fell into it by accident. I worked in my college library as part of my work study package. And one of my colleagues and I were talking about, well, graduation is coming up. What happens? We were English majors. And one of the librarians was like, you should go to library school. It's actually really easy. And it wasn't. It wasn't really easy, but
I was gonna say, I can't say I agree with that.
No, I don't think grad school at all is easy. So, yeah. But I was like, okay, sure. And we both became school librarians and we're both still doing it. And I love it. I think she likes it, but we're not in the same school. So I don't know.
Now, some people may be surprised to hear of a librarian on this kind of technology-based podcast. I would love to hear what your thoughts are on librarians and technology and what role technology has to play, especially in a school library.
Well, I like to think that I speak only for myself and my experiences and not the profession as a whole, because everyone is a little bit different. One of the reasons why I love being a school librarian is that it's pretty open-ended. Like, I love working with students. I love working with young people in all different capacities. And, you know, if I were to have become an English teacher, I would have a lot more constraints over what I can do in the classroom. Obviously, there's still a lot of flexibility, but where I am now, I really am the driver of how I want to incorporate the standards. And so it's something that I just really like, which I also randomly fell into 1,000 years ago. I was like working at the Apple store and I just really liked it. And so the more I incorporate it into what I'm doing, the more I get to do it too. But I think that it is really important because, you know, especially 9, 10, 11 year olds, we can't really say what their experience is going to be like, even in 10 years. So we can kind of give general ideas and foundational skill set. And there's certainly a lot to that. But a lot of library skills take the approach of it's more about the critical thinking skills, and it's more about being analytical and organizational thinking and all of those things that lend really well to the things that we get from different technological resources.
Mm-hmm. I'm so stuck on the fact that you, your superhero origin story is that you worked in an Apple store. You gave this brilliant answer and I was just like, so you were a genius.
Do you use that with your students? I used to use it more. Now it's like kind of old, but it is funny because like they give you business cards. Like I don't know if it's still that way, but in our name tags that like held business cards, and like they handed me my business card and it said my name and then genius under it. And I was like, okay, this is all right. I will take this.
Have I peaked?
It was nice. Is it? It was good. I liked it. Highly recommend. I mean, it's retail, so you have to be able to like be customer facing, which is not an easy thing by any stretch, but it was like, it really fostered like my curiosity in general, because it was a really supportive environment where I was like learning from all people all the time, and customers who come in have different needs, and the people I worked with had different skill sets and hobbies that they brought in to the workplace. It was a highlight of my life for sure.
That sounds a little bit like a very well-functioning library.
Yes, ideally.
Yeah. So you clearly were involved with technology and liked technology if you were a genius at a young age. And so can you tell us about your journey to technology and creative robotics, especially having been an English major and then ending up in the library program? How did technology and creative robotics kind of make its way across your desk?
Well, I think that in New York State, so we have these things called this institution called BOCES. So it is an institution where we have shared services across many districts, and we share a lot of things through our BOCES, from software, staffing, management systems, like top to bottom. Our public school districts have a big hand in BOCES, and or BOCES. We work a lot together, and they put on workshops. And I remember going to the workshops at our local BOCES, and it would be like me and one other teacher, and they would be showing off. That's where I originally learned about the hummingbird robotics, the Makey Makey. So they would kind of show those things. And there are, we have a grant program through BOCES, where we set aside, like our district sets aside a certain amount of money, and BOCES uses that money to try, I don't want to say experimental, but they're looking for new things that can be integrated into classrooms. And so through that, we would get a small number of things. And I have been fortunate in both of these places where, you know, it's tough for two hummingbird kits to like go across an entire classroom. But in the library, there is more of an opportunity for small group work in a lot of ways. And so, especially when I was in the high school. And so thankfully they funneled a lot of stuff to me that way. And it just, you know, it's solving problems. It's using your hands. It's figuring things out. And I just really enjoy doing that.
What does it look like using the hummingbird kits in a school library?
So when I worked in a high school, it was much more free form. So our robotics, I would partner, like one time I partnered with a sixth grade music class, and they all built, oh my gosh, they were studying an opera, and I'm sorry, I don't remember what it was, but there was like a castle or a magic house in the opera. And so as they were learning about this opera as part of their unit, they built these replicas of the castle, and they had like lights and the moving doors. So we use the hummingbird robotics for that. But a lot of it was more makerspace oriented. I had one of those like old AV carts that I just had random stuff on, and kids could just use it, and they really gravitated toward it because the programming is fun, but the hands-on aspect of actually like plugging in the lights and motors is like the coolest thing. Like, that's what really drew them in, was that it's hands-on. And so it really is the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. Here I use it when I'm currently using it with our fifth graders. So they're doing a project where they will just pick their favorite story and their favorite scene from that story and depict it using the hummingbird kit. So they will add, you know, it's could be a lot of them end up looking like dioramas, but they are free to kind of explore how they want to build the whole thing. They just have to include lights, mechanical objects. They all love that they talk and make noise. They can have it say things. They're very excited about it.
This will they go on display in the library so other people can see them?
What we have done in the past is we have had the students record. So we have a day where we present them, and then a student will be the cameraman and they will record everybody's, and then we can present those in a more meaningful way. Mm-hmm. Because we don't, our particular library is not set up for that to be the best way to share the projects. Mm-hmm. But they all do get to see each other's and present theirs to each other.
I bet you get a mad rush for people to check out the books that their friends have created something. I mean, that's a great way to kind of advertise a book, right? It's to be like, not only did your classmate love it, but look what they made. Like, this story is jumping off the page at you.
Oh, yes. We have, a lot. Dogman and Harry Potter are obviously always big hits. Mm-hmm. But it is true. Like, somebody did, I was showing previous projects and somebody did The Secret Garden and they really liked it. And then somebody came and asked me for that book and they had not heard of it. So sometimes they read the books in class, but it is contagious.
Oh, what a good word. It's contagious. The joy is contagious.
It is. Yeah.
Can you share a challenging moment and a rewarding moment from using creative robotics and programming and technology in your classes or in your library space?
Yes, of course. The rewarding moments are all over the place. For me, I want students to be engaged in their learning. So I am very fortunate that I don't have to give grades. I already talked about how I really do have a lot of flexibility. And so I like to tie in the skills that I want them to have. But I want to do it in a way that gets them engaged in the learning process, because I think for me, like, that is the most important thing, especially at this age, you know, that middle school thing. A lot of kids start to kind of shift their priorities away from education and learning and curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I want them to hold on to that for as long as humanly possible. And so to see students who I see often on the discipline referral list, or I'm able to reach students in a different way. Mm-hmm. And that to me is really rewarding, because I know that the way that school is set up is not the best fit for every kid. So to see them come in and be engaged and be, you know, respectful to their classmates, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it's that to me is the most rewarding, is to see them and like see themselves in a more positive light.
Oh yeah. School is not, as you said, it's not set up to allow every learner to see themselves as a leader and as successful. And it sounds like you're providing a space where students who may not be able to stand tall and feel great and collaborate well in other classes can in your space. That's pretty meaningful.
Hopefully. It's not 100% success rate. I mean, still have challenges and
still humans.
Yeah. We do have some kids who it is a challenge for them. And so it's a tougher process to get them involved, but it is true. Like, if we can bring them in, yes, that's what I would like to do. Mm-hmm. My biggest challenge is really just the time constraints. I see them maybe once a week, occasionally twice a week. But especially now we're sliding into field trips and testing and all those wonderful things that I'm glad that they exist. It never feels like enough time, you know, setting up and tearing down, getting cleaned up at the end. Like, by the time we do all that and book exchange, like I wish that we had more time with our students, more time in the calendar, day, probably, not just yeah. like.
And you're one of the teachers that gets to see them for like fourth through seventh grade. So I feel like their classroom teachers probably like, we don't get any time and I only get you for this short school year. But it's tricky to start a project when you only have so much time, and you can either make it kind of truncated or you can do it for 2 months when you have them once a week. And that's very tricky.
I think it caters a lot to students. I don't want to say students these days, but I think that attention span is a tough thing to follow. And so one thing that I really love about these more hands-on projects is that it allows me to do, it's the only thing that I will do as a unit. So it's the only thing that I do where it's not just a one and done lesson, or like, so it builds on itself over mm-hmm. the course of the project, as opposed to just being like a one-time class. So when we were using, when I first started at this age level, I was using Scratch, which everybody mm-hmm. loves Scratch, and I love Scratch, and it's mm-hmm. wonderful, but it's not something that can be done in one class. And it was really difficult to get, them to come back time after time to kind of sit and do things on the computer. So adding that physical computational component was like huge for us. Mm-hmm. It really like the other big unit that we do is 3D printing. And that's another yeah. one where, because they get to like do the design and they get to see it printed, I sneak research in there because Ooh. That's like, I want them to have those skills, but it's tough to get them to be like, all right, databases. Yes, this is really exciting.
I love coming up with the right question to get me the data that I need.
Hit me with some citations. Yeah, I get it. So if we can sneak those in the context of something that they're more engaged in, it's like an across the board win.
And anything that gets your hands on and a physical representation of what you're creating is, I agree. I mean, it keeps me interested. That's the kind of research I love to do when I know it's going into something that I feel passionately about.
Yeah.
You just gave us two incredible tips there. And my next question is about tips that you would give to teachers, advice that you would give if they're looking to start working with technology or creative robotics. But just in that last answer, giving a unit and allowing it to build on itself. That's great advice. And kind of starting with something you know students are going to be passionate about, robotics, 3D printing, and then kind of sneaking in the skills. And then afterwards being like, did you know that not only did you create this, but you also did a really great job researching and kind of, you don't even know you're an expert. So what other gems of advice might you have for teachers who are looking to get started?
I don't know if this is a gem or whether this is my preference, but one thing that I say to a lot of people is to find something that is broadly usable. I think that there are a lot of things out there, especially geared toward education, that is really like has a singular use and that's it. And so I like things that can be incorporated in a whole bunch of different ways, because obviously you get more mileage out of it, and eventually kids will get bored with whatever frame project you have. So mm-hmm. to be able to take that same physical product and present it in a different way to students or do a different kind of project, I think that that's mm-hmm. because it's easy to get inundated with like stuff that you yeah. don't ever use because you had a big grant come through or something like that. And it's just, it gets overwhelming really quickly that way.
Yeah.
My other advice is to check with your librarian, see if they have any great starting points based on where they are in your building, in your district, in your area.
And they're there for a reason, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
And most of them, I don't know if, do you do co-teaching when people want to work on a unit or try something? Will you go teach with them and show them how to use it, help them out?
That was my specific model at the high school. Mm-hmm. So when I was working with high school, it was like every unit that we did, every single thing was collaborative. Although I guess I did teach a couple of electives throughout the years, but and here we do kind of work a little bit together, but I am a special. So mm-hmm. I am a dedicated thing. So my one there here in the library is their prep time. So I'm not going to, I know that teachers need their prep time. I'm not going to infringe on that because you don't get enough of it as it is.
Agreed. So maybe some good advice. I mean, find your librarian, figure out what their schedule is, figure out the best way to learn from them and teach with them and do all of those things.
Absolutely. And if your librarian is not like a super techie person, if they're not, if they don't feel comfortable with the robotics, they will probably know who you can talk to. Mm-hmm. They can probably put you in the right direction. So I might not have all the answers, but I usually know where to find the right answers.
Oh yeah, because you know everybody, because everything happens and the library is like the hub. People just talk over the circulation desk. You know everything about everyone, right?
Too much. Seriously. No, just kidding.
Oh, Karen, it's time for my favorite question. What makes you a flocking amazing educator? Oh, listeners, the eyebrows just shot all the way up. I wish you could have seen that.
If I am indeed flocking amazing, which thank you, that's
you're here. That's proof.
The implication is a compliment. If I am a flocking amazing educator, I would say that probably that I am not afraid for things to go terribly. I am willing to try whatever. I mean, obviously not whatever, but I'm willing to try a lot of new things, and I'm without worrying whether or not it's going to succeed. Just because I think that there's still a learning experience, and I think that it's good for kids to know that this might not be your jam or it might not go the way that you want it to, but there's still value in what we're doing here. And I think that when kids see us as humans who are not perfect and everything is not perfectly designed and running smoothly all the time, first of all, when does everything ever run smoothly in life? Never, right? So I think that it's valuable for them to have that where, well, this isn't working the way that we want it to, so we can either shift gears entirely or let's troubleshoot until we find something that does work. And so I think that that is a really valuable skill for students to have. And I think that that's something that they see a lot in the library with me because I make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. And you celebrate them out loud, like learning not to hide your mistakes, but to kind of celebrate them. That's tricky. Was that always your mindset, or is that something you've had to work on as an educator?
I think that it's something that's come with time. I'm a closet perfectionist, but it's just not possible. And so for my own sanity, I think I had to let a lot of it go and just, but it is too, like, I truly believe that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, which I know is so cliche, but it's so true. I mean, we're here today now doing what we're doing, so why not make the most of it?
Some cliches are cliches for a reason. People say it a lot because it's true. Yeah. Is that another cliche? Cliches are cliches for a reason. Should I needlepoint that onto
something?
Yeah.
I put it on a t-shirt for sure.
Karen, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want our listeners to know? Anything else that you want to share?
This might be obvious to your listening audience, but you know, teachers work hard, librarians, like we work hard. We're here with everybody's best interest in mind. We're here because we want the society coming up to be functioning and educated and be able to think for themselves. And, you know, I think that a lot of teachers, not me personally, I think teachers in general, they take a lot of heat. And I would encourage your listeners to change their mindset about that, because it's just tough enough to be a public school teacher in our world today, and with nobody cutting any slack, it doesn't help.
That's beautifully said. Everyone, just on the same team. We all want kids to be successful. We want them to be happy and smart and ready to take on the world. And teachers and librarians are working really hard to make that happen, and hopefully working with parents and with community stakeholders and
yes.
we're all fighting really hard to reach the same goal. And even though sometimes we're choosing different paths to get there, keeping in mind that we're all working towards the same thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's another thing I'm going to put on a t-shirt. Yeah. Put that on a t-shirt too. I'm going to start selling. You and I will go into business selling t-shirts.
Full of cliches. Let's do it. I'm here for it.
Thank you so much for joining me, Karen, and for telling us a little bit about creative robotics in the library.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is wonderful.
It's great to hear from you. All right, listeners, thank you for joining us for Flocking Amazing, the podcast for quick, bite-sized conversations with real teachers, sharing their real expertise and providing real inspiration to us all. We'll have a new teacher conversation dropping soon, so don't flocking miss it.